everybody. Welcome back. It's Adam Seward, and you're listening to Awaken Life here on KKNW and Transformation Talk Radio and WBLQ, our flagship station over in Rhode Island. So glad you're with us again, as usual, joined here by Rick Seward and Paul DeFuria, my two co-pilots here.
Hello, Adam.
Aloha.
Good to see you guys. And, of course, Eric as well. How you doing, Eric?
Doing great, thanks. So you guys staying dry today?
Well, yeah. I mean, I got a little wet too. It's pretty damp out there. We're really getting into fall here in a hurry.
That's right.
Yeah. So we're here. We're going to talk about responsibility today, and we're going to talk about what it means to be response able, or in other words, able to respond to life, really, and to live in a way that's empowered. And we've got a lot of stuff we want to talk about that. And we're also going to talk about what it means to be responsible in the ultimate sense. So what is ultimate responsibility? And, in the sense of the true self or the supreme self, the self with a capital S, what does it mean to be responsible in that sense? But first I want to talk about what's going on currently in the news around this Occupy Wall Street, and also what this breaking news as of this afternoon, this group Anonymous, and what they're doing in terms of apparently they shut down Wall Street today. We just heard. We literally just arrived in the studio and heard the news on that, and it said that this group Anonymous shut down Wall Street. What? Yeah. So, I mean, Paul, what do you make of this? What's going on?
Yeah, it's the interesting times, right? You know, there's a lot happening, and there's a shift taking place that you've talked about already. But it's starting to show up in political and discourse and just our interactions, as you know, and this whole movement is a function of information technology, sort of the new way we communicate through Twitter and Facebook and websites and all the rest. That's how they've organized this entire thing. So it's like a meme. And the meme is essentially an anger toward the way things are going and some fear around economics and a real desire for things to change and fundamentally shift. And so you see this movement is sort of spread.
Right. Mm-hmm. Right. So this, and I said this at the beginning, you know, from the time we started the show and much earlier this year, I mean, the premise in many ways of the show was that there is a shift taking place in our world. There's primarily a shift in consciousness. And so this uprising, you know, similar to what happened in Egypt or what happened in Libya, but this uprising, as well as this computer hacking, is without a doubt, just like you said, this is an example. This is sort of the beginning, at least in our country, of the way this shift of consciousness expressing itself through civil unrest in many ways.
Yeah, and it's very peaceful at the same time. I was having coffee, and there was a couple of kids who were camping out in Seattle, and one of them started to talk, and I was eavesdropping, and I was really blown away at the level and the conscientiousness that the kid had. He mm-hmm. was so clear about some things, and he was thinking about a global and a cosmic, you know, perspective about it. And I was like, how old are you? Who is this? I have a lot of friends who were there when the 60s, you know, that big thing happened, right? And that was a shift. And there was a big kind of awakening that took place. And everyone at the time just thought, you know, this is it. This is the answer, and we're going to live in peace, and it'll all happen now. Mm. And it didn't really happen that way. You know, but now it seems a lot of them say, well, this is that, except now we have more info and it's more mature and we weren't quite ready. And now maybe we are ready as a culture. And that's what this little 18-year-old kid was saying. He was saying, maybe we have enough, you know, new technology and information that we can shift things for the better. And all we have to do is let go of fear. And I was just, wow, amazed.
That's a lot for an 18-year-old to hold.
It gives me lots of hope. Yeah, it's wonderful.
Yeah. Well, and it seems as though there are people, and this is something that I've really come into clarity around for myself, but there are people who literally incarnated so that they would be around at this time to help assist in the the flowering of consciousness. And of course, and I've shared this with both you, Rick, and Paul, that I've, you know, become aware that that's my identity, or my soul identity, is to show up with that. Well, I showed up with that intention, and literally everything that's happened in my life up to this point has been preparation, or has prepared me to show up now in a specific way in terms of assisting this process that's already happening. And now we're really seeing evidence of it.
Mm-hmm.
It's showing up.
Were either of you surprised that these uprisings started as they did on Wall Street and then grew nationally so quickly? I mean,
no.
Not at all.
Nope.
It was just something I expected to see.
You did too?
Yeah.
Everyone can feel it. You know, every group has their own story about how things are coming apart, right? So, like, some really fundamental Christians feel like rapture is going to be, you know, the second coming. Mm-hmm. The environmentalists, they think there'll be kind of a environmental catastrophe.
Mm-hmm.
The financial folks have been predicting economic collapse.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So every person has some, you know, some of the spiritual circles I run in, they refer to it as the end of fear. They say it's just happening, but it's going to be characterized by something that we haven't even, you know, conceived yet.
Sure.
But it'd be a place where the fear isn't running the show. Survival instincts aren't running the show. And you can still feel people's judgment toward Wall Street, even from if you know what I'm talking about, is they're mocking them as having, you know, wearing hemp and playing hacky sack and camping and right.
Yeah.
And there's sort of a tone about it, like they're dismiss them.
Right.
But in the back of their mind, it's like, well, maybe they're actually the forerunners. They're the ones out there on the avant-garde, you know, they're the ones. And when the shift happens, when this big transformation happens, they'll be the ones assisting us. Yourself.
Yeah.
And we'll be very glad that they've been preparing. And because the shift makes it, the transition easy, because that's the idea, is it can be easier than it has been.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Well, I appreciate what you're saying, because there are a number of different perspectives that we can look at this from. And, you know, each one valid in itself, including the, you know, even the people that are saying, you know, these are just potheads, you know, juggle sticks out there, basically. Just, you know, I mean, they're from that perspective, what they're saying makes sense.
No.
I mean, if you look through their eyes, you'd see the same thing and so on. But I guess what I really am appreciating is the spiritual perspective that you talked about, because that's where I seem to be relating to this the most. And that, again, that's because of my path. That's because of everything that's brought me to this point. Is that's for me, you know, is the, you could say, the highest, widest, deepest lens through which to view this. And so, from that sense, it does seem more like what you said, Paul, the end of fear.
Mm-hmm.
And also
it's characterized also by abundance, right? So people in that, who are living that life, They have a lot of faith. They're not hoarding money, right? Because they know it's going to rise to meet them. They'll have what they need,
right?
And so you can see that, you know, the people arguing and criticizing the law, they say, we're broke. When in fact, there's actually massive amounts of money. It's just misallocated.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what happened with the banks, is their job was to allocate funds and to manage risk and minimize the risk. And what they did is misallocated it and created risk, right? And then they got very scared and they freaked up. They went to, you know, they went to Washington, D.C. and said, the sky's going to fall unless you give us $700 billion. They just cut them a check.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they made these numbers up. It's all made up.
Mm-hmm.
There's money everywhere. The banks have trillions of dollars. They just don't want to lend it. And so right now, everyone's just frustrated because, you know, there's people not working and all these houses empty and massive unemployment and homelessness. It's like, wait a second. Something's just not working here, right?
Yeah.
You know? So things are shifting and that's a good thing.
And what do you think, there's a relationship between the anonymous group and the Occupy Wall Street group? I'm not familiar. I don't know if there is or not, but.
There's probably a connection.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you think of WikiLeaks, you think of this whole movement tied to the internet, but Wall Street, the banking system. I mean, we've got to be diligent. I mean, this is we're at risk. This is serious stuff. So.
Yeah, I mean, if you look at any system, the housing system, the financing system, the political, they're all cracked. They're broken. Everyone knows it, and they don't know what to do about it because it became so massive and unruly, and the institutions are just like resist reform and change. So there are these groups that are splinter groups that are very anti-institutional. They don't trust institutions. They want to destroy them, which is very scary for people.
Well, and as this has been happening, I've been exploring for myself, you know, well, what is my message during this time? And the one thing that keeps coming up is that this overwhelming sense of trust that whatever happens ultimately is for good. And I mean, even the kind of good that's beyond good and bad. It's that, that good that includes both, really.
Well, we need to flesh that out for the listener because I know that's the real juicy piece. And that's not always really easily accessible.
That's right.
Yeah,
that's
let's do it. That's great.
Let's do it. Yeah. Well, so we're going to go to our first break. And if you stay tuned, we're going to, you'll hear more about, well, fleshing this out, just like you said, Paul. you're listening to Awaken Life on KKNW Transformation Talk Radio.
At the law offices of Richard D. Seward, we care about our clients. We offer important legal advice and services to help them grow their wealth and protect it. We manage the risks and help the financially distressed through the recovery process. We are committed and dedicated to helping people throughout Western Washington and beyond with our expertise in business, real estate, tax law, and debt relief. Find us at richardseward.com or call us at 360-876-6425. We care about you.
Call the Oprah of Radio by her listeners. Award-winning host Dr. Pat Basile is blowing the doors off traditional talk radio. Get ready for powerful interviews with leaders in the field of human potential. Dr. Pat's perspective on living life full out has catapulted her show to the top of talk radio. Tune in, and Dr. Pat will help you thrive instead of merely survive. Listen to the Dr. Pat Show Monday through Friday, 10 a.m. to noon on AM 1150, KKNW, and visit thedrpatshow.com.
Hi, this is Adam Seward.
And this is Rick Seward.
And together we partnered to bring you Awaken Life every Monday at 3 here on KKNW 1150 AM. We are fully committed to supporting the unfolding of human and planetary consciousness. And that's why we've also created the Silence Foundation. Well, what is the Silence Foundation? The Silence Foundation is an organization that's dedicated to facilitating the unfolding of human and planetary consciousness through the creation and distribution of what we're calling Awaken Media. We'd love to connect with you. If you'd like to learn more about the Silence Foundation, go to www.adamsewardcounseling.net, fill out our contact form, and we'll get in touch with you right away. Again, that's adamsewardcounseling.net. We look forward to hearing from you. Hey, everybody. Welcome back again. This is Adam Seward, and you're listening to Awaken Life here on KKNW 1150, WBLQ Transformation Talk Radio, coast to coast. So speaking of responsibility, how does the topic today relate to what we see happening out there in the world?
Well, one aspect of responsibility alluded to at the beginning was the ability to respond, right? And so this goes back to what we've been talking about in terms of acceptance and identity, what you identify with. So if you're identifying from the perspective of the small self or your ego, then what you're going to be responding to is coming out of a survivalist sort of mentality, right? How am I going to make it in this? And when you do that, you react. It's like this, like we talked about in evolutionary terms, when the saber-toothed tiger comes in the room, right? But responding is different. It's when you come at it from the place of abiding in a self that has a eternal quality, untouched quality, place where you feel safe.
Mm-hmm.
And we've also talked about in terms of presence. So if you can stop and just be, and it gives you just enough space, really.
Mm.
That's how I like to think about it, space, to be able to see all the different perspectives and respond in an intelligent or a creative way.
Mm.
Instead of reacting as just simply a habit. It's just like it's already preconditioned. And those grooves have been cut over millions of years. So we just immediately, when we're in survival, react in a certain way. But what we're encouraging everyone is to tap into your pure presence, mm-hmm. so you can respond, mm-hmm. instead of being reactive.
Yeah, Deepak Chopra talks sometimes about this in the sense that he says that the space between stimulus and response, that's where choice exists.
Mm-hmm.
And without that space, what we end up doing is a reaction. And if something triggers us, for example, our pain body or some past trauma or just something happens that reminds us of a deeper wound, then we're more likely to react than to take that space that I think you're talking about, Paul, and choose a response.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that space is silence, right? So going back to your book, Embracing Silence.
Embracing
That's
silence.
It. And you can identify with the silence instead of all the spinning thoughts in your head, what you got to do to survive and all that. You can drop into the silence. It gives you that capacity. And that's why a lot of people are either advocating some kind of contemplative prayer or meditation. So the meditation practice can expand. It's like building a muscle. You can bring that into your life moment to moment.
Mm-hmm.
Get really good at it. It's not hard.
Mm-hmm.
It actually becomes way easier.
Because
reactive is a lot of energy being burned, But another piece is the contemplative piece, which is you can actually take time at the end of the day and just review your day and say, how did it go? How did I do?
Mm.
Did I show up the way I wanted to?
Mm-hmm.
Is that what I wanted to say in that situation?
Right.
What really was juicy for me, either really unpleasant or really great. Those are the first things to contemplate, right?
Sure.
That's where you go.
Of course, is the 10th step, actually, of the 12-step program.
There we go.
It's called a daily inventory.
That's it.
Yeah. Mm.
Fearless searching inventory.
Well, that's 4.
Oh, that is?
Okay. you do the fearless and searching for, the past stuff.
Oh, okay. And then you do a daily one, step 10. Well, that's great.
Yeah, it's the daily.
Well, then step 4 is great, too, because, as we've talked about time being relative, there's also the timeless.
Yeah.
And in that, there's an aspect of you that's the same that it was last week as it was last year.
Mm.
So you can take the presence that you're experiencing and the wisdom that comes from the spaciousness of living from it, and you can revisit the 10-year-old you that really had an issue with something really intense, and you can bring yourself right there and literally relive it. And what you do is you bring in consciousness where you didn't have enough information at that time.
Mm-hmm.
You overwhelmed, so you disassociated that experience and didn't even really feel it. So you can go back, relive it in a sense, because you're doing it now, and you're bringing your consciousness that you have developed, your experience, all the information you have, and you can go to the 10-year-old you and put your arm around yourself and just say, you didn't do anything wrong.
Mm-hmm.
You didn't have the understanding that we have now.
You did the best you could with the understanding that you had at the time.
And then you're bringing that awareness. That's where you take the subconscious and you bring awareness to it, and it releases. It brings you present. It creates more space for you.
Mm.
That means
in the present.
That's it.
Because
it's the same moment, right?
Mm-hmm.
If you check then and you say, "What moment is it?" Well, it's now.
Yeah.
You can do that now. It's the same one.
So this is interesting, Paul, because we're talking about what it means to be response-able or responsible.
Mm.
And I think a lot of people, when they hear that sense, it's like, well, you're doing what you should do based on your, agreements and so on. You're fulfilling your responsibilities. But this is a much different way
of talking about it. It's like spiritual eating your peas. Right. And so it's not an injunction. It's more like, you have to do this. It's more understanding. And it's an invitation. because it's way easier and it feels way better. So do it this way. You give yourself a lot of freedom.
So spaciousness is what allows for responsiveness, you know, choosing thoughtful responsiveness, which means more choice and more freedom.
That's right. It's unending. It's limitless. It's like the same freedom is, that's the key to freedom. It's like love. Anytime you try to contain it, one of the preconditions that it's free,
mm-hmm.
open, it's mm-hmm. spacious, just like your awareness. There's no end to it.
Mm-hmm.
If you go just abide, you realize and you be aware of your thoughts are limited. They come and they go.
Mm-hmm.
But what isn't coming and going, right? It's this open, empty, spacious awareness that you are.
Right.
That's what's that's taking full responsibility, is identifying with yourself as that, instead of anything else. Anything else is just mind chatter and nonsense.
So this really is what we meant when we talked about ultimate responsibility.
Yeah.
And it's we thought about saving this real juicy stuff.
Good luck. We can't do that.
I like it. It's a direct approach.
It is. Easy way.
But but just to ground this a little bit, let's talk about why we don't take responsibility or what gets in the way.
Yeah.
Right? Like, for example, the victim identity, the role of the victim. I mean, essentially, the victim is the one who says, I'm not responsible because I didn't have any power in this situation. You made me angry. You made me angry. I just didn't get angry. Right?
Yeah, how does someone know they're a victim, though? I mean, there's a lot of people that are victims out there that don't know it.
Well.
Okay.
So.
I'm glad you said that.
This is a good question.
Because we say a lot of radical things. So why don't we start at the beginning.
So here's my sense of it is that the price of ignoring your responsibility or playing the victim is that you become powerless. So the way that you know you're being a victim is if you feel powerless over a situation or over an event in your life or a person. Do you feel powerless? Ask yourself honestly, inquire internally.
Inquiry,
yeah. And if the answer is yes in any way, then you can be sure that you're in some way playing the victim. In some way. So
the key is there's no problem playing the victim as long as you know you're playing the victim. See, some people identify with themselves as the victim. That's where the suffering comes in.
Right.
See, because what we're saying,
I am a victim.
Instead of I'm just being it.
Right. And most people won't call it that either, right? They'll say, they're not going to go, oh, I'm such a helpless victim. I mean, some people will, you know, and they'll make noise. And every time you meet them, they're going to tell you the story about how they're a victim. But, and that's when it's become really entrenched in the sense that you're stuck in it, right? But the person that is, often in that place, if you tell them, you know, boy, you really sound like you're being, I mean, there's probably people who are already turned off the radio, frankly, you know, if you tell them
we're not saying that people aren't victimized and don't get victimized. We're talking about the identity as victim. When you believe that for someone, you think that can be a sort of way to bond over wounds. And, you know, it feels like empathy, but it isn't really, because you're believing a false story. And that doesn't do them any favors, really. See, it's the identity as the victim that gets them into feeling as though the world is happening to them.
Right.
Right? All of this is happening to me. So that way, their focus becomes on shifting the blame. It becomes the blame game, right?
Mm-hmm. Yep. Finger of blame.
The finger.
Yeah. You gotta blame somebody.
Right, right.
And, it's really a distraction, and it doesn't give you any real choice, because when you can realize that you're playing a role, like we talked about a bus with all kinds of different voices on the bus, the victim's is on the bus, and you just don't want them driving the bus, right? Mm-hmm. Because again, then you feel just separate and as though everything's happening to you and you're trying to invoke sympathy and it's a very disempowering feeling. It's scary and it's, you know. So the shift begins to say, I'm not a victim. It's a radical thing to say.
Mm.
I'm not a victim. Now, awful things have happened.
Well, the same as saying I'm powerful.
That's right.
I have, and part of what we're going to get into later is what it means to have 100% responsibility. to take 100% responsibility. That's radical.
Yeah, that's right. It's, you know, I don't know how much we've talked about the subject and object, but, you know, if you, thoughts and ideas are basically objects, just like this, you know.
Well, yeah, and basically anything you can see, anything that, you know, you can hold in front of you is the object. You're the subject. You're the seer. That's what subjective awareness is. It's just the eye, the one who sees. But the object, that's the, so the subject is the one who sees. The object is that which is seen. So thought, like you said, thoughts, feelings, et cetera, those are all things that can be seen.
All the stuff that happened to you that you feel victimized by, right? Those are all just things that, you know, those are objects essentially. But you're the subject. You're the one that's aware of them. So again, you can create that space and be the one that's aware of the thoughts.
Yes.
Right? And you can be aware of your own experience.
Yeah.
And then you can take that which has the capacity to hold everything.
Right.
And it has the strength and it has the courage to be able to face and to feel the feelings that these circumstances have created.
Well, it's your essential self. It's your true nature that you're talking about.
And it has an infinite capacity to handle it all. And it's ultimately responsible.
And what's one of the tools that this ultimate self uses to deal with these grievances or resentments or ways of feeling powerless? Forgiveness.
Oh, yeah.
Forgiveness.
Yeah.
So we're going to talk about forgiveness when we come back from break. Stay tuned. You'll learn the real jewel that's on the other side of taking responsibility. We'll be right back. You're listening to Awaken Life.
Are you upside down on your home loan and facing foreclosure? Washington's Foreclosure Fairness Act takes effect on July 13th and requires your mortgage holder to grant you a face-to-face meeting to negotiate modifications to your loan that may let you keep your house. More than 5,600 homes were seized in the first 3 months of this year in the state of Washington. Don't let this happen to you. Visit foreclosurefairness.net. That's foreclosurefairness.net. Or call 206-818-9732, your home safety net.
Listen to the Marie Manucherry Show, where energy and medicine meet, every Tuesday and Thursday at noon. It's intelligent and provocative radio. Tuesdays is boot camp for the soul to help you soar. Thursdays, Marie interviews guests from an incredibly talented lineup. To learn more about Marie and her radio show, visit energyintuitive.com or connect with her on Facebook and Twitter. That's the Marie Manucherry Show, every Tuesday and Thursday at noon here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Have you ever wondered why things are the way they are? I'm Ernesto Amaya, host of Pondering Life's Mysteries on 1150 AM KKNW Alternative Talk, Mondays at 5 p.m. Join me in an ongoing discovery and dialogue about consciousness, quantum theories, dreams, and Uranian astrology. Let's talk about the great beyond and understanding the marvels and mysteries in this so-called thing of life. Mondays at 5 p.m. on 1150 a.m. KKNW Alternative Talk.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. This is Adam Seward, and you're listening to Awaken Life. So we were talking about responsibility. We're talking about how it relates to some of the events that are happening on a worldwide level right now. As it relates to awakening. And we're also talking now about forgiveness, because essentially forgiveness is that act of letting go of the blame or the idea even that what someone did to you or what someone did is the reason why you're feeling the way you are, or somehow just placing the blame outside of yourself, and not suggesting that you would blame yourself, but how this concept, this idea, this practice of forgiveness relates to responsibility. I have a quote here from The Course in Miracles, which many of you know is one of my absolute favorite texts, and it says that forgiveness is the key to happiness. Forgiveness offers everything I want. So what do you think it means?
Yeah, well, it is the key, you know. And if you, if we want to go all the way with it, do we want to do that?
Well, why not?
Well, there's the three-step approach, and three-step approach is that you first forgive the other person for some transgression, so you might be really thrown by it, and you have some time to kind of give it some space, then you forgive that person. Then stage two would be to forgive yourself. Because there's an aspect of your own responsibility in the cause of the matter that you don't want to take.
Mm-hmm.
So that takes it up another step where you say, okay, I contributed my piece and I'm going to own that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
Sure.
Forgive myself.
It's like the amends process.
That's it. You forgive yourself.
Yeah.
Step three, I like this particular one, nobody to forgive. There was never anyone to forgive.
And no thing to forgive either. No, there was never a sin committed.
That's it.
Right?
This is all happening as exactly as it should.
Right.
Now, that's the great mystical truth, but it's you know, you got to be careful about that one.
Right. Right.
Right.
Like, for example, if you're hanging off a piece of wood because you've been nailed there, you might not say, oh, forgive them for they know not what they do, nailing me up to this thing and stabbing me in the side. Or would that be kind of, that would be kind of radical.
That's a radical way to approach it.
So, I mean, and an example of there's nothing that this doesn't touch, right? I mean, no matter how badly you feel like you've been wronged, no matter how deeply you feel like you've been hurt, forgiveness is an option. Forgiveness is the option.
It's another way of saying acceptance. Mm-hmm. And we talked about that at length last week.
Yep.
And the way in, letting go. Well, that's all you got to do. It's like the monkey fist, you know, that whole metaphor. You just let go.
Why don't you tell that story, Paul? That's a great story.
Yeah, well,
story.
There's a box with a hole in it, and how they used to catch the monkeys and is they'd put an apple in there,
right.
and the monkey would grab the apple, but the fist wouldn't come through the hole,
right.
Only the hand.
Right.
So he could put the hand in, and he grabs the apple. Well, they would just sit there.
Right. They can't let go. They couldn't let go of the apple.
That's right.
Right.
And they would start, you know, they would get trapped because they were not willing to let go of the monkey.
Right.
In fact, I think there's a bunch of websites, monkeyfist.com. and they get it. The idea is just, let go and you're free. And anything you hold on to is a trap, essentially, including anything we're saying today. I mean, we're saying things and, you know, in the context of our conversation, absolutely. There's a wisdom, of course, that we're sharing that's perennial, you know.
Yeah.
But get that it's yours to create moment to moment, right? So if you can't bring yourself to forgive in that moment, you say, I just need more time.
Mm.
I've read with what information I have in my own experience, I'm not there yet.
Well, one thing that is necessary for letting go is you actually have to hold on first to that whatever it is that you need to let go of, right? So often that means if there's anger in you or some resentment or something, you know, about some event that happened in the past, then you actually have to get in touch with that feeling or that resentment deeply. I mean, there, you have to be pretty intimate with it before you can authentically let it go.
Yeah. It depends on also how much you've cleared from an energetic point of view.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, I'm going a little bit out there. In New Zealand, they call it hippie, hippie, clap, clap. But it's, you know, the energy is held in your body. And, you know, it takes experience to clear that so that you're free enough to allow everyone just to be on their own path. And this, in relationship, it comes up a lot, right?
Mm-hmm.
So you get into relationship with someone, and all of a sudden the rules are changed, right? Then it becomes impossible to forgive people for minor slights that other people get a free pass on.
Mm-hmm.
So it really brings it up and puts the mirror up to you.
Mm-hmm.
Like when you get into an intimate relationship with someone and the stakes are high, given that, you know, you're talking life plans and all that, that's where it comes up.
Mm-hmm.
And that's where the best place to be doing this kind of work,
mm-hmm.
which is forgiving them and yourself, and then dropping it all.
So, Paul.
No, go ahead.
I got to ask this question. We work with people going through tough times financially on a daily basis, okay? So how does this topic of forgiveness relate to these people that are going through this?
Well, we do bankruptcy work, which involves loan forgiveness. So we discharge debts. So it's like, okay, this loan is forgiven. Now it's gone.
It's a nice way that forgiveness is sort of written into.
It is part of federal law.
Yeah. But the important part of rehabilitation for these people,
yes,
and letting go when they
That's
have to.
It. They're actually taking responsibility because what happened is they made some financial choices in their past, and it's really not worked out. and they're trying to, you know, live as though they had the money to afford things they can't afford, right?
Hmm.
And to just, so they gives them the opportunity to just say, I'm going to be responsible and just reorganize given what my current conditions are, right? I'm going to take responsibility for my financial future by being realistic and just really knowing what is. And let me look at the, a lot of people just don't even, they'll get foreclosure notice and they don't even read them. And there are a lot of options in there that they have, but they don't read it because they have so much personal shame.
Right.
They feel like they've done something that they can't forgive themselves. So they can't even confront it.
Yeah. They leave the mail sitting there for a while.
Right.
And
see, and so you drop the shame, you drop the blame, you drop all that recrimination. There's a, it's a judgment free zone. Mm-hmm. Yourself is judgment free.
Right.
Mm-hmm. Right. Your awareness has no, it has discernment.
Right.
But it doesn't judge.
And also, you know, my experience too is that the universe wants to help you. You know, I mean, you're a part of the universe. So it's in the universe's best interest to do absolutely everything it can to serve you. The only question though is how willing are you to receive that? And so I think there's a lot of people that are in that situation and many other situations that, again, like you're saying, because of the shame and because of some unwillingness to forgive themselves, they're not willing to open up to receive what's already being offered
to them,
what's already there.
It's legal. It's actually there to serve them.
Right.
And, you know, we talked earlier about Wall Street, you know, the banks, when they did some things that they made some mistakes, they said, can I press this big $700 billion reset button? Well, consumers have that possibility with debt, you know, and the key that the biggest obstacle is that they can't pick up the phone because they can't, they just feel like I'm doing something wrong by doing this. And you're actually doing something for yourself and everyone that you love.
Yeah.
Freeing yourself up.
I appreciate this because it is a very practical example of how this can operate in our lives. So why don't you give the number? What's the phone number, you guys, just in case anybody wants to use your services?
Well, website is richardseward.com. Also, foreclosurefairness.net.
But what's the, and your office line? Why don't you just give them that?
360-876-6425.
Okay. Yeah. So if you're, you know, just in case there is someone listening that wants, that needs that specific kind of help and is, you know, ready to open to that. I've got another quote here. This is, again, just talking about forgiveness. It says, it is your forgiveness that will bring the world of darkness to light. It is your forgiveness that lets you recognize the light in which you see. Forgiveness is the demonstration that you are the light of the world. Through your forgiveness does the truth about yourself return to your memory. Therefore, in your forgiveness lies your salvation.
It's great. Bringing light to dark.
Yeah.
See, judgment, what that judgment does, essentially, is hold something in form. And to the extent you can do, you know, that's a sin in metaphysical terms, holding something in form. So everything's changing. The judgment says that's bad and you, that's wrong. And so it becomes dark because it's not revisited. It goes into this place that's not seen. And we want to bring the light back to it. There's options. There's possibilities. That's what awareness is the infinite field of possibilities.
It's like forgiveness. Yeah. It's like forgiveness brings light in the sense that it brings your consciousness to the places that you were unwilling to look before.
Yeah, you're always forgiving yourself first. That's why when you forgive someone else, you're the first beneficiary of it.
It's like whatever you had covered in blame, whatever was hiding underneath blame or grievance, that's the word the Course uses a lot, is grievance. Through light, you see, well, you know what I notice a lot of the time is that I just, whether I'm talking to myself or someone else, I just end up saying, wow, you're doing the best you can. You were doing the best you, even when you, you know, even when you, you know, wronged me in the, you know, according to me in this way, which there's no such thing, but all, you know, since now that we've gone all the way with this, there's nothing ultimately to forgive. You were doing the best, you were doing, with the information that you have, you were doing the absolute best you could.
This is part of the course that Isaiah teaches for One Voice Apiece. But
one,
he talks,
yeah.
He'll hold up any object, a pen, or I've got an iPhone here.
Mm-hmm.
And he'll ask, can this be anything other than it is right now? In this moment, can this iPhone be anything other than it is?
Right.
And if you think about all the energy that went into building the glass, the building the case, to doing the software, to build, you know, all this stuff is marketing and shipping.
Right.
This thing to get here took all the energy that went into, first if a star exploded, if you really want to go way back, and a lot of energy went into
right,
it.
Right, right.
And really, it can't be anything other than it is right now.
Mm-hmm.
The truth, the proof of that is, it's this thing.
This is what it
is.
It
would be
yeah.
something else.
Sure.
Well, the same thing's true about
thanks, Jeeves.
You.
Yeah. Thanks, Steve Jobs,
thank
by
you,
the way.
Steve Jobs, yeah. yes.
Right.
Rest in peace. Yes.
Well, I have a quote for him that we'd love to get to. But
absolutely.
The, yeah. the point is, just as this iPhone can't be anything other than it is right now,
yeah.
either can you or anyone you love,
mm-hmm.
anyone you don't love.
Right.
All of they're made up of all the energy and experience that brought them to this moment.
Right.
They couldn't be anything other than that.
Mm-hmm.
Right?
So it's like whatever they did, they couldn't have done anything other than that.
Exactly.
Because what they did was the perfect product of literally everything that happened in their life and led up to that moment.
Yeah. That's a big truth. I mean, that's a big one to hold.
It is. And yeah. it's so, just because saying it is so powerful in terms of opening to the forgiveness that is within that recognition. I mean, if you can just tell yourself right now, I mean, wow, I'm really doing the best I can. And I've always been doing the best I can. There's some
freedom in that.
There is some freedom in that.
That's
there is,
radical yeah. honesty.
All right. Well, we're going to go to our last break here. And when we come back, we're going to really go all the way and look at what the non-dual approach would say about forgiveness and responsibility. Again, you're listening to Awaken Life. We'll be right back.
At the law offices of Richard D. Seward, we care about our clients. We offer important legal advice and services to help them grow their wealth and protect it. We manage the risks and help the financially distressed through the recovery process. We are committed and dedicated to helping people throughout Western Washington and beyond with our expertise in business, real estate, tax law, and debt relief. Find us at richardseward.com or call us at 360-876-6425. We care about you.
Hello, I'm Lauren Archer. I'm a hypnotherapist who helps people change their energy by changing their mind.
And I'm Lorelei Spiegelman. I'm an energy healer that helps people change their minds by changing their energy. Together, we are the Soul Sirens of Seattle, sending out the call for you to remember and awaken the wisdom of your soul.
Tune in on Monday afternoons at 4 o'clock here on Alternative Talk 1150.
Hey, everybody. Welcome back. Again, you're listening to Awaken Life on KKNW Transformation Talk Radio and BLQ coming to you coast to coast. So we've been talking about responsibility. Over the break, we were talking about Steve Jobs and just what a man he was and what a true example of what it means to live a responsible life and to really to embody both personal and transpersonal responsibility. And so, Paul, you got a quote there from him. Would you share that with us?
Sure. Said, almost everything, all external expectations, all pride, all fear of embarrassment or failure, these things just fall away in the face of death, leaving only what is truly important. You are already naked. There's no reason not to follow your heart. Right. So he was speaking about impermanence and in that speech, and it's a really famous one. But essentially, he saw death as the biggest change agent. That's how he called it. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And he's speaking about impermanence itself. Things are coming and going all the time.
Yeah.
And being that person, he was he's a brilliant designer.
Mm-hmm.
Right. In his past, he had a very interesting, I learned a lot about him reading about him after his death, but he went to Reed College in Oregon, right?
Mm-hmm.
And at a time, he sort of dropped out and just took philosophy classes and was taking all kinds of drugs. And then he went, shaved his head, went to India and did a spiritual search. Then he studied, of all things, calligraphy and I Ching, which has, the great, traditional truth of the ages involved. And so this idea of making really exact letters and the importance of the spacing, and that became fundamental to his design. It's simple. It all is communicated in its simplicity, and he's So for having a guy who is such a powerhouse, such an icon of technology, saying first and foremost, you following your heart is the real, I mean, that's really the only true responsibility.
That's what that is. That's the one contract that we all have, is just to do whatever is most loving right now.
That's it.
You know, and right now. Right? I mean, isn't that really what responsibility is?
That's it. What serves the highest in this moment?
What serves the highest? And certainly, I think sometimes, you know, the realm of technology can almost get a bad rap. It's like people look at that and say, oh, well, that's, no, you know, evolution or awakening is more about, you know, our relationship to the earth, and which it certainly is. But what if technology is serving the highest as well, depending on how it's used?
That's absolutely the case.
It sure seems that way. I mean, I'm just thinking about what the internet has done for the flowering of consciousness. I was actually working on really writing a complete my story in its completion. Part of it's for this new website that's coming out, and probably part of it's for another book. But one thing that I recognized when I was doing that was that essentially when I was in undergrad and graduate school, I got a virtual education from the people I was able to identify as the global leaders in consciousness, the absolute cutting edge, things that still haven't made it into our school systems yet because they're so new, and they're such a part of this ever-evolving wave of consciousness that is sort of reaching a peak right now. It's like at the peak of its swell. Well, I don't know if it's at the peak, but it just keeps getting more and more palpable. But really, the internet allowed for that transmission of the highest, truly the highest, to make its way from teachers all over the world into my education, you know, right at that period of my life, 18, 19, 20, 21, 22, 23, 24, 25. I was in school a long time. My thesis, my graduate thesis was on an integral approach to counseling, and it didn't even exist yet. Really, you know, I mean, I was writing a paper on something that didn't even exist. I mean, now, of course, it does, but because that was about 5 years ago. But I thank Steve Jobs so much, because he, and this is why, you know, if you looked on Facebook, you saw his picture everywhere. And, you know, I put the one where he's making the namaste symbol the gesture, because for me, that's where I see him as a vehicle for consciousness in the realm of technology.
Yeah. He, you know, when he was ousted, he recruited the guy, I think he was from Pepsi, the GM to Pepsi, to re-kickstart Apple. And he had the famous line, "Do you want to sell sugar water to kids your whole career?" Right? And so the guy came aboard, but ended running him out, right? Mm. And he spent 10 years and he developed this company that was considered a failure. But actually, they used that technology to come up with the internet. That's where the internet was developed, on that software. Right. And he was that kind of person who, he would see all these young kids coming up with these ideas and then cashing in. You say, that's so sad. Why not change the world? You know, why cash in? That's so small. Play bigger. Yeah. And, well, he said, you know, knowing that you're going to die is the best reminder of knowing you have nothing to lose. And so he's a guy who just would take big risks.
Right. And that's the same thing, I think, that we mean when we say there is no death.
Yeah.
I mean, that's part of the awakened consciousness, is you realize, you know, essentially the ephemeral nature of the human body and the what really does last as your true identity.
That's it.
The eternal one.
Yes. Knowing yourself is the mortal consciousness. That's always been the secret through the ages. It's an open secret, right?
Right. Yeah. So responsibility.
If you identify with yourself as something that comes and goes, whether it's your possessions or your great ideas or whatever, you suffer.
Mm.
You know, suffer the pain of having the attachment and then having it torn from you. All these objects, they just crash into you, right? But when you identify with your true self, you know, it's free.
It's freedom through full. That's 100% responsibility, yeah, isn't it? Isn't it? I mean, where you say, well, the koan, if not you, who? if you're the entire cosmos and you're not responsible, then who is? Who's going to launch that new software, yeah, if you don't?
Well, there's something in you, and only you know what it is, that really is being called on to be birthed. It's the thing you are most passionate about, and the thing that you feel deeply is your reason for being here. So if you're not doing that, you're going to be kind of miserable for obvious reasons,
well,
right?
I'll tell you what, I was sitting in Starbucks earlier today, and this guy, you know, I could just was listening over here in this phone conversation, and it just... You know, money this, receivables that, dividends and whatnot. And it just was like, I don't speak that language too well. But I just remember feeling, man, you know, the world is shifting, and don't you want to be a part of this? There's just something so exciting about doing this kind of work, you know, versus, okay, my money pile isn't quite big enough yet. I need to add, you know, not that that's what he was doing. I don't know, but that is what's happening. And that's why when, you know, something happens in the stock market, people freak out.
Yeah, they jump out the window.
They do, literally. Yeah.
And a lot of people are really giving, you know, giving up the, even if when they are experiencing what we traditionally call success, they're living such contracted, stressful lives of judgment and suffering that it's just, you know.
And in denial,
exactly.
That. Yeah.
Yes. So, you know, there's nothing but compassion that we're feeling for everyone that's suffering is a part of this system that's obviously broken. There are better ways. There are easier ways. And, you know, as we evolve, they're going to be happening faster and faster. And so that's why some of these people who are on the edge of creativity and change that are ushering in us into these are just saying, hey, just be open. Don't fear the change. It's actually good.
Right.
Death is the change agent. It's actually bringing in more. Our capacity to be interdependent on one another is beginning to open up. Mm. And it's obvious to everybody, but it's such a radical thing that it is scary, right? Because there's all these structures in place. We've been paying a lot of into the idol of money. We've been putting tons of energy, right?
Mm-hmm.
You know, people believe it's true. You know, no matter how many times you tell it, money doesn't bring happiness, you know. But still, you know, essentially all the science of happiness, they've all shown once you get to the place where you can survive, you know, no money to pay your bills, after that, every time you double your income, it incremental increases your happiness. There's no more happiness to be had.
Mm.
It's like it's equivalent to pancakes, right? The first pancake's great when you're hungry. But the 15th, you know, when you're full, you don't need
three,
that extra pump.
By three, I'm done. I mean, gosh, you can smell them, though, and you just think, oh, they're going to, I could eat 10 pancakes, but by the third, I'm usually done. Well, this is really an important conversation, and I'm glad we're having it. I mean, essentially, we're talking about responsibility, both pre-personal, where you don't even want to take responsibility and you play the role of the victim, personal, where you say, well, you know, I can forgive you. It wasn't really that bad. To transpersonal, where you're saying, you know, there's really no one to forgive. There was no sin that was committed. It was, you know, you were doing the best you could. Forgive them, for they know not what they do. And also we're talking about it in relationship to the events that are taking place on the planet today, including many of you bodhisattvas out there turning around and saying, you know, this awakening, this gift that I've received, I'm going to give it to the world in some way. And maybe that means showing up on Wall Street for you. Maybe it means, you know, occupying some other city. But it really is about doing what is the most true in your heart, your highest truth.
That's it.
So so a couple weeks from now, I want to tell you too, this is an announcement. We've got about a minute left. We're going to have, Dr. Murphy on the show.
Yes.
And, he's been on Oprah. He's been on Dr. Oz, and he's going to be talking a lot about, nutrition and how that relates to this path we're on. So he's a big guest. We're really excited to talk to him.
Great show.
You guys. By the way, thank you for showing up again today, as usual.
Thank you for having us.
It's a pleasure to be here.
I really appreciate you too. And you guys just being here, you're demonstrating responsibility. just showing up, just so you know that.
I feed off your energy, guys. You guys are great.
All right. Well, lots of love. And everyone out there, thanks so much for tuning in. You know where to find us right here next week at 3 o'clock. Again, you're listening to Awaken Life.